1-800-449-8686. And now, Phil Hendry.
The supreme leader of Afghanistan's hardline Taliban will let a grand council of Islamic clerics decide whether to hand over suspected terrorist mastermind Osama bin Laden to the United States, according to Taliban-run radio. Mullah Mohammed Omar's announcement, read by a broadcaster on Radio Shariat, came after a day of meetings with a Pakistani delegation that included the head of the country's Secret Service. According to the radio broadcast, the gathering of the Islamic Council will involve 20 of the country's preeminent clerics. They'll be given the job of making that decision. There was no guarantee the Taliban would be spared an attack if they do deliver bin Laden, however. Although the Americans would also want the Taliban to hand over all of bin Laden's aides and destroy his facilities, that had not been expected to be a focus of Monday's talk, a senior Pakistani official said, on condition of anonymity. Do you think they'll hand him over? You don't? You don't think they can find him? Maybe what they'll say is, we can't find him. We'd love to hand him over. We don't know where he is. Now, here's something else. Why can't we arm the so-called 15,000 National Alliance guerrillas that are on the ground in Afghanistan right now and not involve any Americans? You may recall, with glee, some of you, when we armed the Mujahideen in the 1980s, it was the death knell for not only the Soviet occupation of Afghanistan, it was the end of that country. It was the end of the Soviet Union. At the end of their occupation of Afghanistan, the whole shooting match fell apart. Now, why can't we do with the Afghani resistance what we did with the Mujahideen? Arm these 15,000. Okay, here you go, Eddie. And you got to go in and get this bin Laden cat. Yeah, okay. You got that? Well, what do we get? Well, what do you get? We'll keep giving you guns. You'll be up to your rear ends in guns. We'll give you guns. We'll give you rocket launchers. We'll give you mortars. We'll give you everything. We'll give you money. We'll give you cash. Why can't we do that? Seems to me, I don't know anything. I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm just a guy talking, okay? Doesn't that sound like a cleaner? Maybe not cleaner. Doesn't that sound like a little bit more of an efficient way of doing things? From this standpoint and this standpoint only, they know the country. They know the terrain. And they've got a real personal interest in this situation. See, we learned in Vietnam, committing American forces to a protracted ground war, etc., etc. You've heard all of the terms. A civil war where we are on a foreign soil and there are guerrilla fighters and you don't know who the enemy is and the front is changing every day and one day it's to the north and the next day it's to the south. And is that NVA? Is that Viet Cong? Who are they? What are they? Where are we? What are we doing here? Well, we learned with the Afghanistan resistance of the Mujahideen against the Soviet Union, we gave those guys all the guns they wanted. Next thing you know, the Russians had a hell of a time even justifying why they were there after a few years. Why can't we do the same thing with these guys now, this national alliance? Or maybe we don't trust these guys. Maybe they're just such a ragtag slipshod operation that we wouldn't trust these cats washing our cars. I don't know. That's another idea. And you know what? Guys, I'm sure you've all thought of this one too. And if you thought of it and I thought of it, these guys in Washington thought of it about a week ago. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Trish on the Phil Hendry Show. Trish, hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Fine.
Great. Pacific Grove, huh?
Yeah, Pacific Grove.
That's nice up there. I hung out up there for one summer.
Yeah. Well, actually, you got both my points. Your pit bull analogy is right on and leads into my point.
Right.
These American Staffordshire dogs are not killers until they're trained as killers. Then they become pit bulls and need to be put out of their misery, just as the messengers of Osama bin Laden.
Well, that's the truth.
Then the trainers must be taken out.
Well, I think that's what Secretary Powell was talking about over the weekend. Go after his network and then go after him or go after him and then his network. I don't know which comes next.
No, I'd say go after them first because I don't think we can send our young, eager troops to kill in foreign territory surrounded by landmines, treacherous mountains, unfamiliar weather, no knowledge of how to find water or food for basic survival. I think we need to hit the individual cells.
No knowledge of how to find water or food. That's not the problem. I mean, we'd have to supply them, obviously.
Yeah, but how are you going to supply them in an area like that where they know the territory and we don't?
If we get them in, then we can supply them. If we get them in, we can supply them.
They need to be there. I think we need to get the cells in the other countries.
All right, now how do you go about doing that?
Well, that's where you have the other countries work with us. And then once we get
the other
cells,
countries being what?
They're all over the world. They've got.
See, now you're getting into that nice blurry area I was talking about, Trish. Now, I was your friend when you started talking. Now you're starting to piss me off. I'm just kidding. You're not pissing me off. No, but I don't know. What are you talking about now?
Okay. I don't think we can send our boys in there. I think we need to hit them hard and fast through the air and big.
Through the air now. I thought we were talking about going to these cells in different countries.
Well, that's got to be done, too. It's like a twofold thing. You have to get the cells. You can't just let those hang out there. But somebody else has to be handling that. We can't do everything.
Are you a doctor? You sound like somebody talking to me about a root canal or something.
No.
Look, okay, let's take this one step at a time. If you're going to go get the cells, these units, these squadrons of Islamic warriors all over the world, many in this country, who are your shock troops? Who's going in to do this job?
Well, that's where we could use our military, and the military from all over the world could be used. I mean, there are cells in Germany, there are cells in probably Spain, France. Who knows? They're everywhere. That's the whole idea. They've been putting out these little arms and legs all along, trying to get in before.
Do you realize how difficult that operation that would be to coordinate, asking Germany's armed forces or police apparatus, Spain's armed forces and police apparatus? Okay, go now. Go get them.
If we fall, doesn't the rest of the world fall?
If what?
If we as a nation fall, doesn't the rest of the world fall too?
If we as a nation fall, doesn't the rest of the world fall? I don't know the answer to that. And if you were to ask the Germans and the Spanish, they might say, no, not necessarily. Look, you got to have an operation that you can control and that you know the target and you can control the attack of those targets.
Well, I don't think you can just concentrate on Afghanistan.
Well, this nebulous concept of getting the Finnish police and the Spanish police and the German police to do this work, you have no control over that. You have to rely upon their intelligence to identify, or do we rely upon our intelligence to identify?
Well, I think they have to work together just like they did in World War II.
In World War II, we had an army under a supreme commander. General Dwight Eisenhower was the supreme commander of all of these armies, and they were in the field, and he could see the tanks and the soldiers, and he told those tanks to go there, tell those soldiers to go there, told those ships to go there. A supreme commander of the internal security apparatus of Germany and Spain, having a supreme commander over all the police agencies of Europe, it's not going to happen. It's not
going to happen.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what can happen, Trish. I'll tell you what can happen, Trish, okay? A military operation, that can happen. A supplying of the National Alliance, that can happen. A strike force, squadrons, commandos, that can happen. But this, pardon me for saying, Trish, because you sound like a nice lady, this ill-thought attempt at controlling all the police agencies of the world to go in and get all these cells out of hotel rooms and apartments and pizza parlors under the supreme heading of the United States ain't going to happen. All right, let's go over to Scott. Scott, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello?
Scott, or Phil, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad. Hey, listen, I just wanted to thank you, first of all. I'm a comic and I travel all over the country and you've made my driving a lot nicer. You're a very talented
Thanks.
Man.
Thanks.
Anyway, I wanted to make a comment about an earlier caller that had asked you when the right time to go back to being funny would be. I had
go back to being funny now. I can barely go, but when they ask me to be funny, I can barely pull that off.
So, you do a great job to me.
Here comes
the
deadline. Be funny on Friday at 3 a.m.
I know that deadline, believe me. Anyway, I had a show the day after the attacks took place, and I had a real problem deciding whether to cancel it or whether to go on. I didn't know how the audience was going to react. I went there, and the place was absolutely packed, first of all, which I thought the turnout was going to be thin.
What town?
It was in Park City, Utah, actually.
Okay.
And it was absolutely packed, and they were very ready to laugh. It seems to me people have been inundated with the news coverage.
Utah. Were these people that Park City like a summer resort? I know it's a skiing
Yeah, it's a skiing resort. They do have, obviously, business drops off a lot in the summertime, but it's a real resort-type area. I mean, there's a lot of money up there.
So you got all these people. They're packed in this room. It's the day after this this horrific thing has occurred. What jokes were you telling?
I did some jokes about that, actually.
Like, give me a joke. Give me a joke. Go ahead.
I said this Bin Laden guy. I mean, what kind of people are following him? Can you imagine going to work Monday morning and your boss says, I have a great plan. We take two planes and we fly into buildings. You kill yourself. What are you going to do? I'm going to be hiding. You know,
That's great. And you got a big resounding ovation from the crowd?
Well, you know, it worked out well. I mean, there's obviously...
It worked out well. That's a far cry from saying they laughed. You know, it worked out well. They had my money at the end of the night. I don't know what to tell you.
No, but they did laugh. But see, I mean, this is the thing. I mean, there's a lot of... I do a lot of jokes about different races and things like that, and I do it in the way that we need to...
But we're not talking about that. We're talking about doing something after something that has hit the psyche of this country so hard, people are walking around stunned. And I can tell you, what you can get away with in a club in Park City, Utah, if I try pulling that stuff now on the air to some 90-plus radio stations, billions and billions and billions, I may be exaggerating, listeners out there, and I can tell you that they would be dragging me behind Jeeps, trucks, anything they could tie me to. God bless you, Scott. And it might be easier when you work in a small club, you work in a small joint like that where the word of mouth is, you know, I don't know, somebody might have walked out of that club and said, and this guy's making jokes about the World Trade Center thing. Maybe they would have run him out of town on a rail. But the fact is, this ain't the time. I say that. Oh, why? I'm telling you right now, I'd be very interested to see what the guys do on TV tonight. I have no idea. I have no idea what I would do where I am. I have no clue. I'll tell you one thing I'd do. I'd can the monologues. Leno and Letterman, can the monologues. Maybe they come out and do interviews. Who are you going to interview? Who are you going to interview that's any more interesting than what they're doing on CNN or Fox? I'm telling you, I don't know the answer. I know today ain't the day. And tomorrow we'll sit down, we'll have a meeting. Is today the day we go back to doing shtick? I don't know. And if we begin a military operation, that's going to push it back another few days. Guaranteed. We'll just wait and see. Thank goodness I can do this kind of radio. I'm not saying I'm great at it, but I know how to sit here and talk. I could talk until I pass out. Doesn't make any difference to me. Take phone calls, read the news stories, give your opinion. Thank goodness that I happen to be a lover of history, and I do read biography, and I do enjoy. I watch biography. I don't read it. Well, I do read biographies. I watch biography. And I do enjoy politics and all of those things, which have no place really in my regular show. I don't sit and monologue at any great length about that stuff. But the time is here, so that's what we're doing. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.
Henry, 1-800-449-8686.
So O'Reilly was going nuts on Fox here just a minute ago saying, I guess he has the senator on who was the one that sponsored the anti-assassination law, federal law, that prohibits our agents, our intelligence community from conducting an assassination to go out and like kill foreign leaders. And didn't I just hear Bush say today, wanted dead or alive? I pretty much think that he signaled his intention to roll back that little piece of legislative falderall. Wanted dead or alive. What if somebody took him literally and said, okay, dead? How you get him to where, I don't know, that's still silly thoughts. Stupid, silly, irrelevant thoughts. Wanted dead or alive, that was what the president said, so I think that means assassination. I think that we can all say that that is going to be That's going to be the objective. And you know, who knows? You know, hey, whoops, we killed him. A little collateral damage from the smart bomb we sent into his bunker. Oh, you mean he's dead? Oh, I'm sorry. We really did want to extract him and bring him and put him on trial, but oh, I guess a rock fell on him. I don't know how these things work. I don't know what excuses one gives. To be honest with you, I don't even know how you credibly can pass a law that says the United States is not in the business, the United States intelligence community is not in the business of assassination. Because there's so many different secret services, so many different intelligence agencies. Israel's at the top of the list that could do the job for you and take full credit for it and not have any problem with that. Here is Cheryl on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I just wanted to tell you I've listened a long time and want to thank you.
You're welcome.
Because I've had a long commute a lot of times and I've laughed a lot.
Where are you driving from? You've laughed a lot, but not today.
Yeah, I mean, you have a great show.
Thank you.
But I'm sorry, I've sat here so long and I've had so many emotions and I have a little girl who's six and I'm so sick and by the what has happened, it's...
Did you say your daughter is six?
Yeah, I have a little girl who's six.
Yeah.
And I did have a comment to make.
Boy, you were emotional there for a minute, but you're right back.
Yeah.
You're okay now?
I hope time doesn't make us all forget what happened Tuesday, because I think
agree.
If we had a day like that every day,
yeah.
I mean, it would wake everybody up. And
yep.
I've always been... worried about what other people thought, but I wanted to get your ideas on, you know, maybe we can't go out there. We really don't know who the enemy is and conquer this conventionally, but there's got to be a way in the United States where we can, you know, protect ourselves more. Because
well, there is, and we have models to follow. We have our own model from World War II. We had active effort on the part of the German spies to infiltrate, Japanese spies to infiltrate. We had a network, an internal security apparatus in the United States during the Second World War. We were not only fighting this war in the Pacific and in Europe, but we were fighting it at home, utilizing anti-espionage, counter-espionage techniques.
Right.
The Israelis, as I mentioned last week, here's a little tiny country that conducts itself as a democracy. And the people go to the beach and they go into nightclubs and they go into restaurants and they try to live their lives as normally as they can. They have a parliamentarian democracy, and yet they are a secure nation. They have a highly, they have a highly visible police presence in that country. A lot of guys in khaki with rifles and bomb sniffing dogs. A lot of cops. A lot of pat downs before you go into a bar. I think that's a model. I think
right.
It's a good model. I think Israel is a brother democracy. They've tried to conduct themselves as freely as they can as a society, and yet they're bordered by nothing but enemies.
Exactly.
So
airline is very safe too.
Yes.
But I pray to God that we do more, you know, human intelligence with the CIA. And,
yes.
And I
we
was
have
talking
to.
About you know exactly racial profiling. I would never, and you know, I really wouldn't. Good hearted, you know, but. If it would take one, there were 19 people in one morning that just a suicide mission, 19 in 2 hours or 3 hours, you know.
Yeah,
and,
but you know what? With the right amount of money, I wonder if they could have hired. If when you get into profiling, I really think you need to look at behavior, not the
exactly.
racial profile,
that's,
because with enough money, those guys could have hired a blonde, blue-eyed,
right.
fair-skinned person to do the job for them.
Right.
You see, in fact, in Europe. The girlfriend of a Islamic,
right.
I want to say Islamic. Do those guys have girlfriends? It was a Middle Eastern terrorist who utilized his Irish girlfriend's baggage to place the bomb that eventually blew the Pan Am flight out of the sky over Lockerbie. So that
right.
was a young woman who was enamored of a young man, and who knew? So I think you profile in terms of behavior, but when
right.
you start with the
but
looks of somebody.
One was on the CIA list.
Yeah.
mean, on a watch list. I mean, don't worry about her. We're sending troops over, you know, men to die. Don't worry about, in America, we keep worrying about hurting everybody's feelings. And
well, we definitely should have had an eye on those guys.
Go home until it's safe.
We should have had an eye on those guys. We should have had a tail on them. Yeah.
You know, not citizens, but people maybe who are on visas.
All right, I got to run, Cheryl. Thanks for calling. Phil Hendry Show will be right back. Thanks for good call, Cheryl. We'll be right back on the Phil Hendry Show.
The Phil Hendry Show is back.
I thought the Fox News Channel was supposed to be the sober alternative to CNN. Wasn't it supposed to be the conservative and sober alternative to CNN, right down to really fair? And I just heard them now go, next up, market news. Have the terrorists won that war already? Yeah, that was very nice and objective and calming. That was about as sensational as anything I've heard on CNN or anything else. They used to be better until Craig started working there. 1-800-449-8686. Here is Kevin. Hi, Kevin. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hi, Phil.
Hi.
I have a comment to make.
I hope so, because you're on hold. You called 1-800-449-8686, and now you're on the air.
Yes, okay.
Well, I'm praying that you have a comment to make.
I do. Okay, first of all, I don't want to sound like Mr. Doom and Gloom, but the way things are going right now, what else are you going to be? Okay?
You could be realistic, you could be sober, you could be analytical, and you could look at the facts, historical, and present.
I understand.
That's what you can do.
I just wanted to make this comment that when the terrorists are playing with no rules, there are none whatsoever. One thing that the world and America has to be mindful of, maybe not prepared, but at least be mindful of, is that this could happen again tomorrow. And they could do something.
The odds of it happening again tomorrow have been decidedly affected, though.
Okay. That's true.
And that's what I mean by being analytical. We can sit there and say, this could happen again tomorrow. Yes, it could. Have we increased the odds against it? Yes, I believe we have. And I think that they've already been automatically increased by virtue of the fact that these guys may have, in planning this thing for years, shot their wad with what they did last Tuesday.
You think so?
Yeah, I do think so. And I gave the reasons last week. I can give them again. First of all, if they had anything else planned other than air terror, they could have affected that between Tuesday and when the airports reopened on Friday. They didn't do it. If the only thing they had planned was air terror, by shutting those airports and by monitoring the skies with patrols, we effectively preempted that. So what else exactly was it they were going to do that they couldn't do? And the other thing is, when you're going to strike like this, you have to strike quickly and you have to strike repeatedly. The more time you take, the more of a chance of detection, because the police are onto you. So you have to hit it, and you have to hit it immediately, and you have to hit it repetitively until such time as, you can get yourself either out of the country or you've knocked the police off guard. So my answer to, or my response to you saying it could happen again tomorrow, that's a nice statement. It's a safe statement to make. I've heard many people make that statement. Mm-hmm. But if you look at it analytically, the chances of it happening again tomorrow have been reduced. I'm not saying it won't. I'm saying that what they did through the air, it's going to take quite a feat to do it again, considering the security that we've got going now. And if there's something they want to do on the ground, they would have done it sooner than now, because the police, everybody, including the American people, are on a very, very high level of alert. So I think statements like it could happen again tomorrow are safe statements to make.
I guess part of it, I have to tell myself that, because I've been hurt so bad in the last few days that I have to mentally tell myself, be prepared for it. I don't know.
You know what you got to be prepared for? You have to be prepared for war, and you have to allow yourself to accept the possibility of losing that war, so you stay sharp and you stay focused and you stay hardworking and you continue to stay focused on what is of real value. So other than that, you can go about your life, go to your job, but I think all of us, every single one of us now realize we've got a whole lot to lose. We've got a country that we value so much. I just heard somebody say it, and it was eloquent in its simplicity. I don't know if I've ever really been a flag waver, but I feel today I would do anything for my country. And I don't know if I would make that statement in quite that way, but if we aren't awakened to the fact that, yes, we can lose this place, we can lose it, and then they can do something else with it. Maybe the jihad cats will take over, and it'll be just a great world after that. Maybe once we get rid of the evil America, then the Islamic jihad and all of their lieutenants and all of the people that pump their fists in the air, then they can take over, and what a party it'll be then, right? With their women wearing veils over their heads and women wearing veils over their heads. The Taliban, this movement, you notice when you see these crowds pumping their fists in the air, they're all men. You want to know why? Because these guys, I'm not saying Islam, but these guys have absolutely no value for women whatsoever. And the Taliban is notorious, internationally renowned for their abuse of women. This is the difference, guys. This is the fight today. This is why Phil Hendry talks the way he does. This is a Phil Hendry who, at the age of 19, 20, resisted the draft in Vietnam. And I do it again. I do it again. This is the Phil Hendry who was skeptical about the Gulf War because I thought it was a war for oil and not democracy. But today, I stand here telling you that we are faced with a war that is as clearly defined between good and evil as what our grandfathers and our fathers fought in World War II. This is an opportunity for this generation to fight a fight that is definitely a fight between good and evil, if you're at all into those concepts. And personally, I'm not really, but I subscribe more to terms like life-supporting and life-threatening. But for the purposes of our conversation, good and evil will suffice. And it's a fight between the future of the world, which is America, and the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, which is represented by these guys like bin Laden, taking the world by the throat and dragging it back to medieval times, wrapping women in, wrapping them up and binding their feet and brutalizing them and abusing them, a world run by religious fanatics. Haven't we had enough of that? Europe had a history of it. I never thought I'd hear myself say these words. I never thought I'd hear myself talk this way. I'm a child of the Vietnam era. I'm a child of the civil rights era. I'm a child of the anti-establishment, the freaks and the hippies and the yuppies and the yippies. I pumped my fist in the air. I thought it was the most awesome thing I ever saw when I saw those people fighting the cops in Chicago, and when I saw Nixon resign, and when I saw Agnew get pulled down. I thought the government was going to hell in a handbasket, and I loved it. Because nothing in those days was a clearly defined fight between good and evil. All we knew was what was going wrong with the country, what seemed to be very seriously wrong with this country, and all we could do was identify the people that we thought were taking it in that direction and hope that they would just leave and get some people back from Vietnam before they got into a body bag. But those days are over. Those fights have been fought. Those wars have been fought. Those battles have been fought and either won or lost. Today it's 2001. And today, we're faced with as clear a choice between good and evil as our grandparents and our parents. America, which I believe represents a future, the only future the world has got, which is a democratic future. Otherwise, what do you suggest? We go back to a monarchy? What would you like us to do? Go back to one of the crumbling, decrepit monarchies of the late 19th, early 20th century? That's what World War I was fought for, to get rid of the Kaiser and the freaking Tsar. We had autocrats. We had guys, one guy, I'm going to make the decision for everybody. That's what these guys want to return the world to. They want to go back to a world of mullahs. Men, old, decrepit old men making decisions for everybody. And only one religion, only one, Islam. And their perverted, ridiculous, unacceptable interpretation of it. Or the future of the world, which lies with the right-thinking people wherever they are, democratic people, people who are in love with culture, people who are in love with happiness, people that are in love with life, people that don't operate out of fear. They can be afraid. They just don't let it influence the decisions that they make. I mean, we're talking about where we're living right now, man. I don't know what you got on the agenda, but this is about as good as it gets for me. I don't know. I mean, you know, I've been around the world. I've been in communist countries. I've been in Europe. I've been in Asia. I've seen what they got. I got nothing against the Chinese people or the Japanese people or anybody. I've seen what they got. This is it for me. Doesn't mean I don't want to get on a plane and fly and have a vacation in one of those places, stay a couple of weeks, drink their chi-chis, and get the hell out of there and come on home. I got all kinds of problems with America. Most of the problems I have with America, by the way, haven't got to do with my government. It's got to do with the people that live here and the way that we behave sometimes. Well, you know what? I said it last week. I'll say it again. I don't mean to hit this too hard. Brighter people than I have said it. If there's anything good that comes out of what happened to us on Tuesday, it's the fact that we're all taking another look at this country, taking another look at what we got and what we can lose. And if you got a better idea on how we can run things, man, I'd love to hear it. You want to go to the Islamic route, to the jihad route, baby? You want to wrap yourself up in clothes that went out of style about 300 years ago, grow your beard long, and I don't know whatever the hell else those cats want to do, and have some kind of an autocratic, theocratic regime where religion rules the roost, where we go back to the Middle Ages, we go back to the Dark Ages, Inquisitions. I mean, that's what we're looking at. And not only that, we're looking at it, the face of it is a mad, murderous dog. It's not a thoughtful man. It's not a man interested in conversation who's going to sit down and, well, tea for everyone. Let's just discuss our religious differences. Geez, even that would be, you get a good laugh out of it, then maybe you want to sit on a rap with the guy for a little bit, find out what he's all about. This guy's got no interest in convincing us of anything. He wants to kill you. He wants to kill you. He said it. Jews and Americans, kill them, as many of them as you can, anywhere that you find them. Now I realize he's a real big shot today, because in the press I just read, I didn't have anything to do with that. I don't know what I'm a good guy. I didn't do anything. What did I do? Real balls to the wall, that guy Bin Laden. And he, you know, if this guy's got such big balls, you maybe he'd just as soon say, yeah, I did it. You're right, I did it. What are you going to do? Why don't you come at me? Let's get the war going. He wants a jihad. Why doesn't he have the cojones to say, yeah, I did it. I love what they did. Let's get the war going. I would think he'd welcome it. Isn't this the holy war that they want? But he's like every other big talker. He's a freaking scratch him deep enough. He's a freaking coward who sends young men to die for him. Now I'm going to have a freaking stroke. So I have to take a break here. Anyway, it's the Phil Hendry Show, 1-800-449-8686.
Phil Hendry, 1-800-449-8686.
Craig and I are talking about weight. I'm holding at 236. I'm holding at 236. I think it was up about 239, actually, but I was on the scale at the kids' school, and I don't know how accurate that is, and I was in my sweaty workout clothes, but I'm back on Weight Watchers today. Now, I took the summer off, essentially, but I'm back on it today, and because I can feel myself blimping out just a little bit. That ain't going to happen to me again. It's Phil Hendry Show here, 1-800-449-8686. So anyway, where do you want to eat, Craig, after the show? No, you want garlic bread with that? Anyway, so how about that Bin Laden? And we'll take a phone call here, but just roll that one around for a while. This guy is such a coward. He's got his holy war on his doorstep, the one that he always wanted. He's going to fight the infidel. He's going to fight America, the great Satan, right there in Afghanistan. Pakistan, all those holy warriors, man, it ought to be just a hot time in the old town tonight, baby. And when they go to him and ask him, did you do the job there in New York? Oh, I didn't do that. No, that's someone else. I've been told I can't do. Don't you think the guy would say, if he had a pair at all, he'd say, well, maybe I didn't do it, but I applaud it. I love it. Bring the war on. Let's go. This is my opportunity. I think it's great. Don't you think he'd be vociferous? Don't you think he'd be in somebody's face? Don't you think he'd be pumping his fist in the air, wildly jumping in the streets, burning a flag? But instead, I'm doing everything that they told me to do, and I haven't made any phone calls, and it must be somebody else. After all the big talk, I'm telling you, man, it's too bad we're doing a show in America. I wish I was on the air right now in, like, Baghdad or something. I mean, you know, in a steel-reinforced bunker where they couldn't get to me. And I was talking directly to those cats and saying, look at your big shot leader now. Big man. And I bet you they'd say something to me like, you don't understand Bin Laden, you know, he's going to come after. He's biding his time. He's biding his time? What do you mean he's biding his time? Biding's time for what? He's got the holy war. He can make a few more really inflammatory statements that would really get people pissed off. He could rally the troops. Wouldn't you, if you were him, wouldn't you right now be rallying the troops? That's right, yeah, America's going to come. He's not saying a word. This guy is chicken. He's chicken. That's what we're faced with. He's got all these kids that he's filled their heads full of all kinds of wild ideas about the jihad and the great Islamic Republic to come. They're in the streets. They're going ape. He sent young men off to turn themselves into human bombs. He's butchered. He's slaughtered. He's done it. And now, right when he can have his holy war, right when the world is on the brink of the holy war that he's always wanted, this chicken is sitting out there in Afghanistan. Gee, me? No, I was having dinner with my wife. I have no idea. They told me not to do anything. I didn't do anything. What a gutless wonder. If I was this guy's follower, I'd be having some second thoughts today. But that would mean I'd have to have some brains in my head, and I don't know how many people actually follow this cat. They got 14 cents worth of marbles left. All right, 1-800, I'm just wasting my breath, right? 1-800-449-8686. Jim, you're on the Phil Hendry Show. Hello.
Good evening, Phil. How are you?
Fine, how are you?
Pretty good, sir. I have to admit, this is the first time I've ever heard your show, and it just forced me to call. I'm a retired...
Yeah, well, I'm going to scare you now. This is not usually the show we do.
Well... Yeah, I think it's appropriate right now. So
okay,
thank
thanks.
You. But,
go ahead.
But I just wanted to touch on a couple of points. My family's been military, United States Army, since we came to this country in the 1700s. So I'm pretty biased on the point of the military doing their job and protecting the Constitution and the national security of the United States. My father spent 6 tours in Vietnam, and my brother spent 2. I was in Somalia, and I just want to say that I always questioned, not my duty or not my orders, but I always questioned why, you know, we're always the ones to go help everybody else. You know, we're the ones that get out there, and we're going to protect democracy around the world. Well, you know, without being threatened or without being, you know, spit upon, here we are. They've, over the past several years, they've bombed the World Trade Center. They've blown them up now with flying bombs. They've bombed our embassies. You know, how much do we have to take before we protect ourselves and stand up for ourselves and say, look, this is...
I think this is about it. Now, Jim, you'll be happy to know this is it. This is all we have to take.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, they blew up a couple of buildings, and then, you know, then we're going to do something about it.
Yeah.
So rest assured. Thank you for your call. I like it when people give me the military resume of their family. You know, it's... I'd love to give my family's... My father was in the Canadian Army, so it just this doesn't quite translate, you know. And I wish I could say I'd been here since Daniel Boone, but God bless you, buddy. 1-800-449-8686. This is the Phil Hendry Show.